the Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Torta. This show is featuring Randy Dowd and the staff of Onward and Upward, a Mansu-based nonprofit dedicated to creating a culture of One Health in Alaska focusing on youth. Onward and Upward offers programs for youth and adults that incorporate adventure, wellness, and skills to help students overcome adversity and develop resilience. Stay tuned for Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Tordock, and today we're talking about Onward and Upward, a program out in the valley aimed at mostly at youth. I have with me today Randy Dowd, who's the executive director of Onward and Upward, Amanda Montavon, the director of operations, Louisa Branchflower, director of development, and Kevin Vaca, the lead instructor. Welcome to the show, folks.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having us.
Now, Randy, let's start with you. Why don't you give us a little bit of the origin story of Onward and Upward?
Yeah, thanks for that, Paul. I'd love to. So Onward and Upward was founded and established in 2007. We've grown a lot since then. Initially started it as a way to help youth kind of develop their health and a good sense of well-being.
And what was your, you started it, correct?
I did, yeah. Yeah, initially as a hobby, just sort of figuring out the lay of the land and how to, create something that had good meaning to it and filled a niche, a need in the community.
And as you said, a hobby, an interesting hobby. Why?
Yeah. So I was an environmental educator and just trying to kind of figure out how best to, get through to kids and get the message across. And I think through that process, I realized that, for many kids, their basic needs weren't being met. They were having issues with their mental health, and sense of well-being. And so that kind of redirected me to start thinking about, well, how do I, help them develop this for themselves and thereby then allowing them to, care more about the environment and those around them.
And what is the mission of Onward and Upward?
Yeah, thanks. So it's to establish a culture of One Health in Alaska through evidence-based action. So we can talk a little bit more about what One Health is here in a little bit, but that's the basis for our curriculum and basically the why behind what we do.
And there's quite the Alaska Pacific University connection here, as we'll all find out. But it was I recall there's a connection there a little bit also with your education.
Yeah, for sure. So I mentioned how I kind of made a redirection in my life, and through that process, I decided to pursue figuring out how to do this through my master's degree at APU. I was in the Master of Arts program and was able to really craft my focus and vision for the nonprofit through that program. So it really just allowed me to do that. And then once I finished that, then I continued on and was able to get my doctorate in psychology and just really craft the curriculum so that, it'd have that evidence-based background that it really needs to have.
And you picked the Valley. So why the Valley?
Yeah. I feel like it's, the Valley, the Mat-Su Valley, the Wasilla Palmer has just been in this tremendous growth phase. Like it's one of the fastest growing areas in the state, and I think even nationally. And there's just lots of opportunities and also a need. There's a strong need. And so the idea is to really plant the seed in the Valley, so to speak, and let it grow. And as we develop and refine our curriculum and the quality of the program, then we're going to scale up and start offering programs beyond. And we're already doing that. We're already scaling. and growing out our programs.
It's a fascinating story, Randy, because it's like a startup. Like the other side, it's, sure, it's a nonprofit, a 501c3, but on the other hand, you had to build this thing. What were some significant hurdles and some significant sort of milestones along the way, and particularly I'm thinking with some partners and funding?
Yeah, for sure. There has been plenty of hurdles along the way, a lot of struggles, some redirection. It's not the same organization that it was when I started it. Still same mission, same vision, but has taken a lot of detours and redirects. And so, and some of those amazing changes, the positive things, have really come from our partners, like just really being embedded in the community, having amazing partners like the Matsu Health Foundation, who have supported us so tremendously, as well as, you know, our important programs like Thrive Matsu and Connect Tribe and U360. So lots of really great partners that have just supported us, and I like to think that we support them as well in their missions.
Great. Let's talk about some of the programs. Amanda, you want to talk about that? This is Amanda Montalban. You mentioned the director of operations. So,
yeah.
What kind of programs? Sort of paint a picture of what Onward and Upward does for us.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Like Randy was mentioning, we are a wellness promotion programs, and so we help students build their own strengths. The One Health model that we use in our curriculum is about providing experiences for students to create positive connections. And so we have what we call the five P's, and it's person, people, place, planet, and possibility. And so it's getting students out in the community and providing them experiences that help them build their own personal well-being, like building self-efficacy, growth mindset, self-awareness, emotional regulation. So that's the person. And the people is the pro-social relationship skills. So we do a lot of team building activities with our programs and our classes, and we help students build those interpersonal relationship skills. The place is getting them integrated in the community through guest speakers, field trips, and service projects. The planet is all of our environmental education and outdoor education that we do. And the possibility is just getting them inspired and hopeful for the future, excited about their future. And so the One Health is that, you know, we have this interconnected relationship with the people around us and the planet, and the health of our community will impact our own personal well-being.
Let's talk about the person a little bit. Who do you serve?
Most of our students are high school students. We during the academic school year, we partner with local high schools, and we're teaching classes in the schools for credit. So we do a One Health class where students can get a health credit, and we do a lot of PE elective classes that get students outdoors and recreating. Our goal is to get students out of out of school. And so we have vans, and we do a lot of field trips with our students. We also do some custom programs for our community partners, and we do some middle school, an occasional elementary group, and some adults, but most of our students are the high school age.
So are you partnering with schools or teachers? I'm a teacher. How's that work?
We partner with the schools. With some of our school partners, we do collaborate with other teachers. That's always a lot of fun, and we love when we get the chance to do that. But most of the time, we're running our own programs within the school. And we do a lot of after-school programming for schools. We're at Burchell High School, Valley Pathways High School. We do homeschool programs and do programs for Matsu Central.
Great. And place. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So, you know, we want students to connect to the history and the culture of the place. So we do a lot of field trips where we talk about the local history and the traditions of the first people of Alaska here. and we do service projects. You know, it's important that the students feel connected to their community, a sense of belonging. And so we try to foster that through, you know, getting them involved in community events.
That's great. Now, earlier, before we started, you talked about how this is not a treatment program, but on the other hand, you're also, on the web, it says adventure therapy. So sort of explain that dynamic a little bit.
Yeah, there's definitely therapeutic benefits that students receive from participating, but we're not a treatment program. So we're not doing it our programs in a prescriptive manner. They're just more general wellness promotion that we focus on. And we are evidence-based, or we've gone through a two-year evaluation process from a third party, and we continue to evaluate our programs. And, you know, that's really important to us that we are doing that evaluation process to learn and grow and making sure that we're having the outcomes that we're wanting.
And what are those outcomes? What's the evidence, and what are the goals, and what's the evidence?
Yeah,
what are you looking for?
It's really building those positive protective factors so that students come out of the program with a sense of growth, whether that's the pro-social relationship skills. You know, a lot of the students have learned, or we've had students tell us, like, hey, I take these team-building things, and I talk to my family about it. And so I think they're learning these, you know, interpersonal relationship skills that they can then use elsewhere in their life. So it's all about the transferable lesson. And we do that in a really specific way where we'll, you know, front load an activity and then provide the experience. And then we reflect upon it. And during that reflection process, we talk about what are the transferable lessons? What did we learn through this experience that we can take and apply to different areas in our lives? And you know, I talked about the person earlier and that sense of growth mindset, that resiliency. So for an example, we'll do problem solving activities, and the activity is designed to have challenge to it. And students learn how to collaborate with one another, work together to figure out how to overcome that challenge. And it's really fun to watch and to witness the students stepping into leadership roles and gaining that self-confidence, confidence in their own ability. So just really strengthening students and empowering them to, you know, grow, you know, just to have that direction towards well-being.
Yeah, I think most people can relate to being in high school and, you know, lacking confidence. It's just a time of life that you really don't know. They can know a lot, but you also know that you don't know a lot. And so having that that kind of programming, so I wish I had it when I was in high school. So
yeah, just the you know, sometimes students don't even know how to, you know, start a conversation with someone, and you know, so we have a lot of games and activities that get students interacting with each other, and you know, it's a lot of social emotional learning, but it's a lot more than that as well.
Let's talk about the different programs. Maybe Kevin, this is Kevin Vaca, you're the lead instructor.
Yep.
What does lead instructor do, Kevin?
Hey, yeah, so I'm the one that's in there with all of the students. Yeah, I am facilitating all of the activities that we're doing. I am taking kids out on field trips, making sure that they have the gear that they need. Yeah, all of that.
And also an APU alum, as is Manda.
Yep. APU alum, I graduated in 2019.
And what, so talk about some of the programs that you guys run.
Yeah, so this past year, we've done an outdoor rec class with Brochelle High School. That's an after-school program. We've done a lot of programs with Kanik Tribe. Basically, we would pick up students and we do everything from hiking to cross-country skiing. We just finished a program this past Friday doing ice fishing. So we're very well-versed in the amount of classes that we teach. Right now, our after-school program at Brochelle High School is archery and leadership. We use archery as a tool to teach leadership skills within students.
How does that work? Like, I think, what's her name? know, Mockingbird, but like how
Katniss Everdeen?
Yeah, there you go. Like how does it must be popular, and like how do you translate leadership into archery?
Yeah, so students love archery because they get to pretend like they're Katniss Everdeen a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
Basically within that class, what we'll do is we'll teach them how to facilitate the range and what it means to set up, and eventually they should be able to come into class and configure roles within the group so that they would bring out the targets, bring out the bows, bring out the arrows, and there's always a leader of the day within our classes every single day, and they're the one facilitating that role. So that leadership role is meant for them to practice their leadership skills and make mistakes now so that when they eventually get into a leadership role, they're comfortable with it.
Yeah, so it's not just about archery, but it's also about managing risk and managing other people.
Exactly, yeah. Yep.
That's great. This is Paul Torlak. You're listening to The Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Today we have the staff of Onward and Upward, a One Health program for youth out in the valley. And we're sitting here today in the Matt Sue Health Foundation's conference room. So, Kevin, what other programs do you have?
So that's usually what we do in wintertime is we're involved in the schools. And then during the summer times, we do our own programs based around the Matsu Valley. So we do a four-day rock climbing trip, and we do an eight-day backpacking trip as well.
All right. And where are those at?
So the four-day rock climbing trip is in the Talkeetna Mountain Ranges off of the Willow Fishhook Road. And the 4 day rock climbing trip is over near Puritan Creek.
Great. And talk a little bit about, like, if I'm a parent, so these are ones I can sign my kid up for, do they have to be referred, or like, how's that work?
Yeah, so there are scholarships available through partners, and we would be able to help parents and students find those scholarships just through our website, onwardandupward.org. And you can sign up for all those programs on our website as well.
Yeah, and that's going on now, I take it?
Yep. They are open for enrollment.
Right. So pretty much anybody. How big are the groups? Let's start with that. What's the ratio of instructor to?
Yeah.
Groups?
So we have a 1-to-6 ratio. So every one instructor to 6 students, and we usually run 12 students per program.
And how long are these programs? Like, how's the? Is it just a day? Or is it a whole summer? Like how?
A 4 day rock climbing trip, and basically what will happen is we'll meet them at a location. It's usually the Burchell Ropes course, and that's basically where we start to become our team. So we'll do a lot of intro activities with them, and then we'll go and camp, set them up for gear at either the APU Kellogg Farm or the Knowles Farm, just depending on where we can. And then what we'll do is we'll go and teach them climbing techniques, and then we'll head out towards Puritan Creek, and we'll actually camp out there for a night, 2 nights.
Yeah, great. What equipment do they need? What do people need to show up with?
Yeah, great question. So we help out students and parents with gear, with what they need, but there is a whole inventory or gear list that is on our website, and the parents and students can look through that and figure out what they have. So obviously they're going to need rain gear because it's summertime in Alaska, possibly a sleeping bag and a sleeping pad, but we'll provide all of the group gear stuff like tents, kitchen setups, kitchen tarps, stuff like that. And if students or parents don't have the funding or any of the clothes necessary, cotton in the backcountry isn't the best. So if
cotton kills,
yeah,
that's
cotton
the
kills.
I've
yeah,
heard that, yeah,
yeah. So if students only have cotton clothing, we will provide other necessary things for them, and we'll always be in touch with parents and students about that and help them out with whatever they need.
That's very sounds very very accessible program. You mentioned the ropes course mm-hmm. at Burchell. So explain that a little bit for people who aren't familiar with those kind of facilities.
Yeah, so a high ropes course is more or less a challenge course. So basically what happens is it's these different elements suspended about 20 to 30 feet in the air by telephone poles, and it's all a mixture of wires.
That sounds exciting, yeah.
Yeah, it's really fun. But there's always a progression that goes into our ropes course days. So it always starts on the ground. We always have our ground school, and that's ranging from all of our different activities because we need to see how a team interacts with one another before we can bring them up on the high ropes course. We have a really high risk threshold for us, or low risk threshold. So we definitely need to see that a team works well before we can even bring them up on the high ropes course. And eventually what that will look like is they'll be working together with a belay team of five on the ropes course. So there's interactiveness between all of the students so they're not disengaged while someone else is climbing up. So it takes a whole team for one person to even get up on the high ropes course. And that whole thing is meant for kids to learn that they have self-efficacy within themselves. They can build that resiliency like Amanda was talking about earlier.
Let's talk about risk management on that. Let's talk about risk in general, and anybody can chime in here, about the use of risk in these kind of programs and how important that is and how real it is versus versus risk management and trying to keep people safe. First of all, what's the role of risk in these kind of programs? Why even have it?
Yeah, so we hold risk very seriously. We are accredited through AEE.
Which is?
Association of Experiential Education.
Thank you.
Yep. And we go through them for all of our risk management. So they hold a very high standard for risk. So I talked about a little bit earlier of having a really low risk threshold. And we follow that pretty seriously at Onward and Upward. We have a risk management talk with our students before every activity. We talk about the possible risks because we want them to think about what risks are involved within every activity that we take on. So it's pretty big at Onward and Upward, especially within our summer courses, because obviously there's a lot more risk involved within those activities within the rather than the school activities.
But back to why risk, and again, anybody can chime in on this. There's been publicity over the years with adventure type programs, mostly in the desert, about people, things not going well. So, Randy, you want to talk about this? Like, why risk? Why is it important? And at what levels, has it become too much?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So yeah, like Kevin was saying, we take risk very seriously and the prevention of risk. So there's actually, two, you can kind of break it down a little bit into perceived risk versus actual risk. Perceived risk is just the idea of like what we do on the ropes course. Like it's high and it's scary, and that's perceived risk, because how we feel about it is that's the perception that we have, right? But there's very low actual risk, right? So like on the high ropes course, we have the highest level of training that's available, certifications for the course, as well as maintaining our gear appropriately and having those checks and balances to assure that what we're doing is we're not going to expose our students to unnecessary risk, right? So they go into this experience feeling like there's a high level of risk, but really it's just their perception of that risk. And so when we do, every course that we do what's called a RAMP, which is our risk assessment and management plan. And really we just break the course down into every fine detail and look at every potential risk that students can be exposed to. And then how do we mitigate that risk? How do we reduce that so that everybody comes back from the experience in a safe manner? And that's fundamental to everything that we do, is making sure that students come back in a safe way.
Yeah, why? I mean, tell us why.
Well, challenge is a big part of, overcoming challenges is a big part of that personal growth. And they're, you know, having students engage in discussion around risk mitigation really helps them to build that critical thinking and decision making. And like Randy was saying, the actual risk is mitigated really well. But there's, you know, we'll use the example of driving in a car, right? That's probably the riskiest thing we do, is transporting students from place to place. But we'll use this analogy with students and talk about how we obey traffic laws and speed limits and wear a seatbelt and what we do in our life to assess and mitigate risk. That's a really good transferable lesson. It gets students thinking about what is a healthy risk and what is a risk that doesn't have personal benefit. And we're really hoping that by taking students through that process of considering risk and how do we mitigate risk, it also helps them to have that same decision-making ability in other areas of their life.
That's fantastic, yeah. And I think risk also creates a dissonance in the individual. We've all been there where we're like uncomfortable with something. And if it's perceived, that's even better, and that we learn to grow from that, right?
Yeah, and everything we do is challenged by choice. We talk a lot about this on the challenge course, and we get students to think about what's their comfort zone, what's their learning zone, and what's the stress zone. And so we have an activity that introduces these three concepts, and we want students to get out of their comfort zone. We want them to challenge themselves, but we want them to do it in a healthy way that is not going to put them in a state of stress and isn't going to cause personal harm. So emotional and physical, you know, well-being is really important. That's our mission. And so that's why we have such a low risk tolerance. We're not climbing Denali with these students, right? Our 8-day backpacking course is a beginner level course. The terrain it's off trail and students are using map and compass. But there's no big, mountain edges, or we're not taking students in avalanche terrain. You know, we make a conscious choice to choose activities that have, a little bit of challenge to them, but are relatively pretty low on the risk scale.
And, mentioned, sort of the idea of perceived risk. We've talked about that some, but I'm also interested in sort of the management. And I was thinking, for instance, you mentioned AEE, and there, and Randy mentioned like risk management plans. What other institutional steps do you take? Like, I'm thinking about instructor qualifications and that the other steps that you take used to mitigate risk.
Yeah, a lot goes into it. Our accreditation is a huge part of it. Our internal risk assessment and management plans is another big part. But we also have an external risk management committee. And so they kind of give a objective viewpoint of our programs and our management plans and help give feedback to us about industry standards. And we also, for instructors, you know, for the rock climbing program, our instructors are certified through the Professional Climbing Guide Institute. So they hold national certifications. They're wilderness first responders. They are, you know, professionals in the outdoor industry. And they're, you know, there's a lot of certifications because of the challenge course. We're also, you know, certified facilitators through the Climbing Technology Association, ACCT, and we keep our instructors up to date in trainings, and as a staff team, we have a lot of internal reviews of our risk management plans and curriculum.
And the course, this is telephone poles and wires, and it's inspected, I assume?
Yeah, every year it's inspected by a external person. A lot of times someone's flying up from the lower 48 to do that inspection. But then, of course, every time before we use the course, we do a inspection as well.
Great. Thank you very much. This is Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Paul Tordock. We're sitting here talking to the staff of Onward and Upward, program out in the valley, a One Health program aimed at youth. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Torduck. We're talking with the staff of Onward and Upward in the Valley. Kevin Vlaka here is the lead instructor.
Hey.
So why don't you talk a little bit about the specific skills and knowledge that your participants gain in these programs.
Yeah, so first I guess we'll talk about the rock climbing trip. So within the rock climbing trip, we teach everything from like climbing techniques, to belaying, rappelling, and we'll basically set them up, so that they would be able to, recreate by themselves in the outdoors. But before we even go out on the trips, we usually start in town. We'll usually camp out at a location, somewhere in the valley, whether it be the Knowles Farm, whether it be Ski Talk or APU Kellogg Farm, and then we'll get kids ready to go out in the backcountry. So we'll talk about moose and bear prevention and response. We'll talk about how to keep your stuff warm and dry, how to sleep warm and dry, and how a little lesson on camp stoves, because a lot of students don't know how to cook on a camp stove. Yeah. How to poop in the woods, because students have never done that before. And then we'll go out and we'll actually teach more technical skills on the rock climbing trip. So we'll talk about climbing techniques, basically climbing with your legs instead of trying to haul your way up there with your arms. We'll teach them belaying so that they can grab a partner from someone like that has also taken our rock climbing course, and they can go out to ARG or Denali Fitness and go rock climbing for themselves. And if they have their own gear, being able to go out and set up a top roping area.
So they're learning these specific outdoor skills. What other things are they learning about? Like what are the things that they'll take out into the rest of their lives?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So along with those kinds of things, I think just like having an appreciation for the outdoors is really big on our programs. We follow LNT principles, right?
That's leave no trace.
Yep, yep. Leave no trace. We teach those throughout our program, so I think it gives students a great appreciation for the outdoors. It gives them a better sense about how to recreate within the outdoors properly. If you are traveling in the backcountry with a large group, spreading out so that you mitigate the impact that you have on the land itself. But if there's an established trail, stay on that trail so that you're able to go out and lessen your impact on everything around that. Working together is huge within the backcountry. You need to rely on your team. So kids can apply that to how they live every single day, and relying on one another and how to ask for help if they need help is really big within a team. So that is a transferable lesson that they get through our programs that they can apply to their real lives.
And I assume confidence and communication, as we talk about hard skills being light a stove, mm-hmm. The camp, set up a tent, and then the soft skills are more along the lines of communication and personal growth. Do they come out with more confidence, I hope?
Oh, yes. Yeah, totally. There's a huge change from the beginning of a trip to, we always take a before and after picture. It just looks, they're nice and clean right before we go out on the 8-day backpacking trip.
Probably looking a little bit nervous.
Yeah, looking a little bit nervous, shy. They're not talking to anybody in the group, or they know like a couple people. But towards the end, they're looking dirty. They just experienced a lot of different challenges within the backcountry, and they're really close as a group. They have their inside jokes that they've experienced throughout the 8 days, and they're definitely they're a team at that point. Yeah, they have that sense of accomplishment where they're
They're excited of what they just did, and they're proud of what they just did. So that's building that self-efficacy within them to establish the thought of they know that they can do something, rather than just being like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I can do that, that self-confidence aspect rather than that self-efficacy.
That's very powerful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Let's talk a little bit about that. You mentioned, I think, Amanda, at some point about the evidence-based, or I guess Randy wants to talk. Randy's going to talk about this.
Sure.
So the idea of measuring this, and I think one of the critiques of these kind of programs has been that, well, do they really work? Do they really work in the long term? And so talk about measuring that. And you talk about evidence. What's the evidence?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for that question, Paul. So earlier on, I mentioned one of our big partners is the Matsu Health Foundation. They've been just an amazing supporter of ours. And one of the ways that they supported us was to fund a 2-year program evaluation of our program so that we can be evidence-based. You know, as a nonprofit, we rely on grants to be able to deliver our programs for the most part. And many entities out there, donors, look at, is the program evidence-based? And so that's something we need to look into as an organization. Are we showing that what we say we're doing, we're actually accomplishing? But even more important than that, of course, is the actual students. What are they gaining from it? And so so this has always been a big focus of ours, is, you know, maintaining a high level of quality in our programs. Not only just in the risk management world that, you know, that we were just discussing, but, you know, in the efficacy of our programs, how do we show that they're being effective? And we had completed that program evaluation in 2020. So I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, it was 2018 to 2020. And so it was a tremendous learning experience for us. For the most part, we had found that what we were doing showed positive results. Our whole full intent at that point was to continue the study. However, it was March of 2020 when the pandemic hit us and changed everything that we do and how we do it. And so we kind of changed some of our programs to be online, which, you know, we're a very experiential education focused program. And so changing that to distance learning was just, I guess, a challenge,
yeah,
to say the least.
Yep, yep, yep.
But it was great. We learned so much. We built so many partnerships over that 2 years that, you know, where the pandemic was the strongest and most damaging. And so now we're coming out hopefully on the other end and stronger than we were before, and with tremendous partners, and we're now picking up our program evaluation again and really evaluating and assessing our programs, our outcomes.
And how do you do that? Like, let's pick a outcome like confidence or communication. How do you actually determine whether you're having an effect?
Yeah, so we had utilized the Institute for Circumpolar Health Studies at UAA, at the University of Alaska Anchorage. They had designed an evaluation program for us, and through that, see if I can get this correct. So there was there were surveys involved. What else? Interviews and observations. So it was kind of like this threefold way of identifying how the students were taking on those outcomes and how hopefully the programs were improving their health and well-being.
Yeah, that's so important. This might be for anybody. The interview, Kevin, you mentioned earlier about the pictures, you know, before and after pictures. Do you have an example? Do you have a particular story that you don't have to use names of someone who, or a group that stands out? Maybe they had a particular challenge or a particular hard or interesting event that stands out.
Well, I love running into previous students in the community, and I personally get to hear a lot of stories about how the backpacking trip or a different program really had a positive impact on them. Even years later, you know, I'll run into students and they'll talk about being on a program with me. And you know, one student, I ran into him a year later, and he talked about when he got home from the backpacking program, he had to organize all of his room and get, because you know, you're living with everything you need in your backpack. And we talk about systems, you know, you have to have good systems out there. You have to know where you put something. You have to keep track of your gear. And I just thought that was funny that's what he took away from it, was you being organized with his belongings and, you know, inspired to, you know, he said the program changed his life too. But what I thought was a really good one was the organization.
Well, every parent's going to love that. You're going to have a bunch of kids sign up. But boy, if they get their kids to have their rooms better organized, wow.
And we get returning students. We've had a student do our backpacking program 3 years in a row. And just to see him excited about coming back and stepping into leadership positions within the group, and seeing that change in the student from year to year. Of course, there's other teachers and parents, and there's all, you know, our community supports our students in their growth and well-being. But our programs definitely play a role in that as well. And, you know, we do things like sit down and have a family dinner with students. Nice. In our One Health class, when we're talking about nutrition, we'll also talk about, you know, mindful eating. And we'll go to the APU Kellogg House Farm up here in Palmer, and they have a kitchen and dining room, and we'll sit down and have dinner. And one student shared with me that she had never done that before. You know, she'd never sat at a meal and had a family-style dinner before, and how impactful that was for her. I think One Health is a pretty broad range. You know, we have a lot of general outcomes that we're aiming for, and I think students are all affected in a different way by participating in the programs.
Go ahead, Randy.
Yeah, thanks, Amanda. That's really great. The another sort of just adding on to that a little bit, we also have a good partnership with Nine Star, which is a local organization. I think they're statewide, but whereas a lot of some of our students are able to then, once they graduate, come and work for us, and Nine Star helps us facilitate that. And so that's just a great progression to see that our students, our former students, now then can come and work with us, and it just builds on to their skills even more so.
Yeah, Nine Star is a fantastic program. Let's talk about, this is Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Tordock. We're talking with the staff of Onward and Upward out in the Valley. Let's talk, next up is sort of your levels of adventure, right? So I like this, like there's level one, level two, and level three. Amanda, do you want to explain what those are?
Yeah, we want students to, one, know what they're getting into, what they're signing up for, right? And what the physical, challenges are going to be. So we've separated our summer programs into different levels. Currently we have a level two and a level three. We've labeled our rock climbing program a level two adventure. We only hike to our remote climbing site. It's a mile away from the road, so it's not very strenuous. There's a lot of technical skills, but students aren't carrying backpacks every day and hiking from camp to camp every day. The backpacking program, students are moving every single day, unless they take a weather day or rest day. It's a pretty challenging physically. It's a beginner level program, but students are still walking off trail over uneven terrain with 30 to 40 pound backpacks. And that can be really challenging for students. We're hopeful that next summer we'll add a canoe expedition to our summer offerings, wanting that to be a level one adventure where students can have maybe feel less intimidated and still, you know, get their toes wet, so to speak, in an adventure. So we really want our programs to be accessible to all abilities. And we don't, you know, some students are inspired by a challenge and other students are scared away by thinking that they might have a hard challenge. So we just have these, we're aiming for three different levels of adventure in those summer programs.
I think also that it sounds like a nice progression. And I think the word we haven't talked yet about is resilience. And in these times between the pandemic and so many uncertainties in the world, I think that's a program that has really developed resilience.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. And interestingly, that's resilience is where our name came from, Onward and Upward. The idiom that is onward and upward, to move onward and upward when confronted with adversity, right? It means to kind of rise above it and learn from it and grow from it and have that growth mindset that comes from that. And, you know, we at the fundamental level, a lot of our experiences, like on the how we use the challenge courses, is that the students fail. So they learn that failing is not a bad thing, that failing can be a good thing. And we use the acronym, Found Another Important Lesson, for FAIL. And it's how we can learn and grow from it, especially as a team, how we can learn to rise above adversity and grow from it, as opposed to having a failure mindset.
Yeah, life is full of challenges and successes, and that's a great lesson. Let's go to Louisa. We have Louisa Branchflower here, also an AP alum, right? You graduated from the master's program.
I did. Oh, actually, undergrad.
Undergraduate, yep. I'm sorry. And you're the director of development. Let's go to the future a little bit and what's going on. Where is this organization headed?
I just am fortunate enough to have joined the organization a little less than a year ago, and I've just been blown away by the amazing things that these people are doing and the people themselves. I mean, they're just the best people. We have such impactful things in this community that we're able to do, but we're unfortunately limited by a lot of things, including not having our own facility. They mentioned, you know, using a couple of different places around the valley, which is great. It's great that we have supportive partners and stuff. But we're very spread out, and that limits our ability to reach more people and do more classes. So as we look ahead, we'd love to have a facility, a dedicated facility that we could host our programs on, something where we can store our gear in, one place that we have all our gear, one place that we can have our students come to meet us and do our, you know, have our own high ropes course there that we can maintain, have a community gathering space, an outdoor classroom. Those are kind of some of the visions of this facility that we've been looking at over the course of the last couple years. For the next few years, luckily we got a grant from the Matsu Health Foundation, to help us for the next 3 years as far as salary goes, but we still are in need of the facility. So we're looking for a place, 8 to 10 acres, ideally somewhere between Palmer and Wasilla, that we can build this.
Wow, that's a big project.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you're raising money and looking for grants and.
Yep. Exactly.
Right. So a facility. Also, what about programs? Any great ideas that. Maybe dreams of programming and growth or non-growth? We'll go back to Randy here.
Oh, yeah. No, thanks. I just, as a program that we haven't talked about yet is our adult professional development program. So our focus and the heart of all of our programs is really on youth, particularly youth who might be struggling or vulnerable or disenfranchised in various degrees. That's basically the heart of our program. But something else we do is work with community partners and businesses, corporations, and provide professional development courses for them. So that might look like a day on the ropes course for team building or developing leadership skills and communication skills. And so those programs have been really impactful. But it's hard to do those programs without a facility of our own, right? So, as Louisa mentioned, like, we have these great community partners that were able to use their facilities, and you know, just it's great that we have that, but to be able to have a facility of our own would make a huge impact on particularly our scaling as we grow. And so it would really help, you know, every single one of our courses, because it would provide us that base camp to operate from. And a safe place as the Mat-Su Health Foundation building is, we've had our catalytic converters stolen out of all of our vans. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, you know, setbacks like that. And so having a secure place to keep our equipment and to operate from would be important.
Yeah. What other future, looking at Kevin or Amanda, like, what other dreams do you guys have for this program?
Well, we have a pretty big wheelhouse of activities already in the winter. We're cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, ice fishing. In the summer, it's rock climbing and backpacking, hopefully canoeing soon. So I think not really diverse, adding more programs, but maybe adding different levels. Like, the rock climbing program is very beginner. Students aren't learning how to build their own anchors at that point. And so maybe adding additional, what's the next step for students, and adding more programs such as that. But really working, right now we're really working on the quality of the programs that we currently have. That's our main focus right now.
One question I had as far as I know, there's some enrollment happening now for the summer. Is that right?
Yep. Summer programs are open for enrollment on our website.
Great. And what are the costs? And I know Kevin mentioned scholarships, but does it cost? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, there is a tuition fee. The 8-day backpacking is $1,000. The 4-day rock climbing program is $500. And there's a lot of expenses that go into operating these programs. So if you compare our tuition rate to, say, Knowles or other similar organizations providing similar programming, we're very low, on the low end of that tuition rate. And we want our programs to be accessible for our community members. But we do have expenses that we need to pay for to operate these programs. A lot of our community partners offer scholarships, and so it's very often 75% of the students in these summer programs are there on scholarships. So there's a lot of, we work with parents and we work with our partners to find funding for students who might not be able to pay for that whole tuition rate.
So that process is, they would apply, and then is there a scholarship application?
There's usually, with our partners, we'll ask if they already have a scholarship through our partners, and we list those partners on the website. But parents can and often do email about scholarship opportunities. And if that's the case, we work to find what scholarship would work with them.
Yeah, great. Kevin, any dreams that you have for the future for this program? Or?
I guess what just Amanda was talking about, I really like the programs that we're offering right now, and I love the direction that Onward and Upward is going. Being able to teach students how to build anchors one day would be awesome. That way they can go out and recreate within the beautiful mountains that we have around the valley, and they're doing it in a risk-mitigated way. So I think that would be one aspect that I would love to see eventually that we grow in, is just being able to teach students how to recreate and rock climb in a risk mitigated way, so that they can recreate safe in the outdoors.
One thing I thought of, we have a few minutes left here, is how are families involved? Well, it seems like these One of the critiques of adventure therapy is that they come, they do these programs, they're in this great environment, they're all smiles and happy and huggy, and then they leave and go back to the environment they were in. How are families? Do you all have families involved, or what's the follow-up for them?
Well, I think we were very intentional with being community-based and within the schools and not just doing expedition programs. We're not just a program where you send your kids to for 30 days or, you know, we're community-based, and a lot of our programs, students can participate in year after year within the schools. So there's not that disconnect of, you know, like what you were saying, sending your kid away and then they just get put back into their same environment that they were in before. We're working within the community so that students don't have that disconnect of, you know, they learn something positive, but then they're just put back into their same environment. I'll hand it off to Randy. He has some more to add to that.
Yeah, no, I think as you were describing that, Amanda, a sort of an example came to mind. One snippet of like our backpacking course. At the end of our backpacking course, students come back and, you know, as they're feeling so accomplished and just getting back from a very meaningful experience and absorbing it all, we engage the parents and their families in that experience. So we have a nice family meal at the end of that course, inviting all the family members and anyone they want to invite. And we're able to sit down together and laugh and share about stories. I think that's one of the most powerful moments, is when you have that bonding experience between the students and their parents and their just their whole family. So it's a really great way to just incorporate them all together.
Then I think, just superficially, or you know, from looking from the outside, that in fact you have kids coming back is a great metric of success.
Yeah, for sure. We get a lot of return students, and that's really great. And something else I just wanted to mention too is for our school-based programs, winter programs, well, and our summer programs too, we are starting to scale those and grow those out. We just received additional funding to hire another staff member. We're excited about our staff team growing and being able to offer our programs more broadly in different schools and just expanding outward.
Yeah, what a great program. Well, I appreciate you all joining us today. This is Paul Torlak with Outdoor Explorer. I've been joined with Randy Dowd, the Executive Director of Onward and Upward, Amanda Montemont, the Director of Operations, Kevin Vaca, the Lead Instructor, and Louisa Branchflower, the Director of Development. So thank you all very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. I appreciate it.
Thanks to my guests from Onward and Upward, Executive Director Randy Dowd and his staff Amanda Montevan, Kevin Vaca, Louisa Branchflower, and a special thanks to our producer, Eric Burt. Visit the Outdoor Explorer website for links to Onward and Upward's website. This is your host, Paul Torlak. From all the hosts at Outdoor Explorer, thanks for listening, be resilient, and we'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.